Hey, welcome to episode 99 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles, and it is just amazing how much there is to talk about every week. Seems like it's gotten even busier and busier. You'd think all regular seasons would seem busy, but this season, there's just so many things going on. Anyways, let's start right off the bat with the great season that Nick Suzuki, captain of the Montreal Canadiens, is having. And once again, the self-anointed experts look really unknowledgeable, doubting that he could be the captain. Was he too young? Would he lead the way? He is, as I've said in previous episodes, the perfect captain for the Montreal Canadiens, and I think is the dead center combination of Bob Gainey and Guy Carboneau. He has that type of leadership. He brings a calmness in his captaincy. He brings already at his young age a tutelage for other players to look up to. He leads by example. He leaves it all on the ice, and he is just having a great season in Montreal without a doubt. And while we're on the topic of the doubters and the self-anointed geniuses out there, they must be once again just trying to hide under every rock that they could possibly find, because wow, were they wrong about Arbor Jacki. The one-time walk-on at the OHL level and at the NHL level has not only made the team, not only stayed with the team, not only has evolved his game, but is now a top four defender for the Montreal Canadiens. From the very beginning, I've said he is not a one-dimensional player. He's not just a fighter, and fighting is merely a part of his game, and I won't even say fighting is a part of his game. Physical presence and intimidation is a part of his game, and finally, the Canadiens have somebody who's not afraid to defend their players. They finally have protection for their players, and not just the Cole Caulfields or Alex Newhooks or smaller players on the roster, but there is an intimidation factor there of, well, you take a shot at one of my players, you're going to probably pay the price and get hurt. And I don't have a problem with that. Every NHL club needs that. That keeps players in check. That keeps people understanding their place. And I know in today's ridiculous society that saying someone has a place that they should be in probably isn't a word that a lot of people would like, but it's the truth. People need to know their place, which is another way of just merely saying people need to know their limitations, what is and is not allowable. And taking cheap shots at players that you supposedly care about, that are supposedly fellow union brothers in the NHL, and potentially ending their careers, causing lots of man game loss, causing unnecessary injuries. You should be out of the league, in any league, if you're doing things like that. That is not part of the sport, and you need players that will create a check and balance system, and that's exactly what Arbor Jacki is. In addition to the fact, again, as I've mentioned before, an incredible first pass, can be a quarterback on the power play, has a rifle for a shot and a cannon when he lets it go on a goaltender, can fire from the point, has a great transition game, has very smooth skating and agile skating, and can deke goaltenders. What can the guy not do? I mean, other than he's not going to be a sniper and score, you know, the 50 goal, 100 point mark that offensive players might, he's not going to be as offensive a defenseman as Roman Josi in Nashville is. But like I've said, and I maintain, he is the MVP of that team over everybody else. And there's some great news that I'll wrap up this conversation with today that's coming as well. There's going to be another Jacki in the lineup soon as well. But all these self-prognosticators, self-made experts, anointed to royalism, have just got to be unbelievably embarrassed about their inaccuracy. On another positive note, it has been great to see the resurgence of Joel Armia. I honestly would not have guessed that his time in Laval would have been that absolutely fantastic for him. And it's not a development issue with him, because he's obviously of that age that development, he is what he is, but he can evolve. And that's what it's been, is an evolution of his game, a rekindling of a passion for his game, finding purpose, finding position on a team, having an understandable position and job, and knowing what his expectations are. That has been what Laval did for him, and coach Martin St. Louis, and the management, as well as development staff of the organization. organization as well. Those have been the key to Joel Armia's success and resurgence. And I'm happy for him, because the guy at one time just looked like couldn't care less, had no purpose, looked totally lost. All of that has changed for him, and that's been great to see. But there are already those people that are sitting there going, oh, we got to trade him. He has got to be traded by the end of the offseason. Before you worry about trading Joel Armia, and I'm not saying don't, because there's certainly going to be players pushing for roster spots. However, there's a couple of guys that might be ahead of him in the name of Josh Anderson, Brendan Gallagher, Christian Dvorak. Those might be some players that you might move first. And again, out of that list, I am a huge Brendan Gallagher fan, and it's great that he's got 13 goals and 13 assists. That's probably more goals than anybody thought he would have had this year. He too, in a similar fashion to Joel Armia, has found and adapted to and taken on and is all for his new role or way that he can help the team, because that's what he wants to do, is help the team in any way he possibly can. That being said, with his resurgence, still shows there's gas in Brendan Gallagher's tank, and perhaps there's a team with the increase in salary cap this offseason that might need that kind of leadership, a player who still has speed and can skate, a player that can still put it in the net. Who knows? Maybe the Edmonton Oilers could use him. It would be a combination of, do they have enough cap space, and how much cap space is freeing up on their roster would he fit in? Would he fit into Detroit? Would he fit into Dallas, Las Vegas? It depends on how much cap space that they have. And will Montreal get a lot for him? Probably not. Probably not nearly enough. However, the greatest value in moving Brendan Gallagher would be to move that contract and not have to retain any. Josh Anderson, on the other hand, has an opportunity because he's played solidly defensively, because he's still viewed as that great power forward, big, fluid skater. Nobody's ever questioned his skating. And given the fact that John Tortorella loves him, Montreal probably missed out on getting as nearly much compensation as they could have had they traded him last year when first round picks were part of the deal. But they might be able to send him to the Philadelphia Flyers for Anaheim's second round pick, which will be a pretty high pick that Philadelphia already owns based on other trades. That may be the way to move him. And yeah, just for a second round pick, I understand. But again, it's moving an annual $5.5 million contract that doesn't run out until the 2027 season. And as for Christian Dvorak, I loved his return from his injury, scored 2 goals in his returning game. Maybe he'll be able to finish up the season so he can draw some attention from another organization who's looking for a depth center, anything from a maybe second line center to probably a third or fourth line center, who that might put over the top and give him a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup. I don't mean Dvorak, but the team that would be acquiring him. And that's a way to move him out. Because again, Montreal, for all the people that continue to talk about trades and continue to talk about, oh, Montreal has to pick up this player and that player and trade for this player, you got 4 starting centers. I mean, unless somebody has a really bad preseason, Nick Suzuki's there, unquestionable. Kirby Dach is number 2, unquestionable. Unless Owen Beck has a really bad preseason, which he is not in his first 2 training camps, he's your third line center. And Jared Davidson, I think, is another diamond in the rough, 5th round pick, who was a late bloomer out of the Seattle franchise of the Western Hockey League, I think is your 4th line center. So where are you going to put Dvorak or any of these other players that you're talking about acquiring? Montreal will benefit in addition to moving those players. I'm going to mention some other players that some are going to be, oh yeah, we could move that. Others are going to be, are you out of your mind? David Savard, he's a great team player. He's a great locker room presence. He's been a great player to place rookie or younger players with on defense that has done an amazing job with them. Unfortunately, again, it's a roster room issue as far as having space on the roster. Mike Matheson has had a tremendous offensive season, has established himself as one of the best offensive defensemen in the league, and is an amazing skater. But again, with all the defensive prospects coming, maybe you hold on to Matheson one more year. Maybe you trade him at his highest peak value. Not going to be a popular trade. Totally understand that. Everybody's like, oh my God, how can you move Mike Matheson? Well, when you have a Reinbacher, Hudson, Mailou, Gouley, Jack Guy, and take your pick as a partner, whether it's Jaden Struble, Jordan Harris, and the list is limitless. Unfortunately, you can only dress 6, which, as long as we're talking about defensive offensive prospects or defensemen in general, these are the defensive prospects that I would move. Justin Barron, Dmitry Kostenko, Matthias Norlander. Those would be the younger prospects I would move. They're going to be good. They're just not going to be as good as the other prospects that Montreal has, so they're going to slip down the ladder. And you could probably get some pretty decent draft capital return for those players. On the offensive side, I know a lot of people have made a big deal about Jake Evans and his defensive performance this year, his clutch play and things like that. Again, it's just so many prospects, so many spaces or positions you have available. Again, maybe this is the year to trade him at max value. He was a 7th round pick in the 2014 draft. Maybe you can land a 3rd or a 2nd with him. Raphael Harvey-Pinard, again, is just going to be a casualty of the amount of talent that's in Montreal. His first year was fantastic. People projected that could turn into a 30-plus goal per season performance. It just hasn't worked out for him. Another young forward that people had high hopes for, Jesse Ylönen. Again, he's a casualty of the numbers. There's no room on the lines that gives him enough minutes to play and elevate his play. He's just stuck on the 4th line, and he may turn into another Arturi Lehtinen. And if so, grab some draft picks for him. Colin White and Tanner Pearson, fortunately, are just going to walk away. Colin White is a one and done. Tanner Pearson's contract expires. They're just going to move on. And then finally, Oliver Kapanen and Jacob Olofsson. Again, there's just not going to be room for them in Montreal, and you can at least get the same level of draft pick and return that was spent for drafting them initially in their respective drafts. Which brings me to the latest round of players that Montreal's got to sign. Starting with forward Danton Heinen from the Boston Bruins, followed by Eric Robertson, forward of the Buffalo Sabres, Christian Fisher, forward from the Detroit Red Wings, and forward Kyle Okposo from the Florida Panthers. And not to be left out is forward Roque Carrier from the Ottawa Senators, and defenseman Kelvin DeHaan from the Tampa Bay Lightning, and an equally and even mostly head-scratching option of Max Domi from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Why does Montreal need any of these players with the amount of organizational depth just in Laval, let alone all the prospects? Why would Montreal need any of these players? Why would Montreal take up roster spots that their own internal players and prospects are waiting for? I just don't get it. And the most bizarre out of all those players I mentioned has got to be Max Domi. He's already been there. Why would Montreal bring him back? There are a lot of people that will outright complain about what hasn't worked in Montreal and for how many years, if not decades, it doesn't work in Montreal. Rehired coaches that they've had in the past, Michel Therrien comes to mind, Claude Julien comes to mind, amongst others, bringing players back for another go-around. And Max Domi would be the most recent version of that. If it didn't work the first time, why would you bring him back again? Let's put this in another perspective that people will go, oh my God, don't do that. Don't even say that. It'd be like bringing Jonathan Drouin back. Well, he's had a resurgent year in Colorado. Yeah, because he's playing with his junior line mate, as well as a player who happens to be a leading Hart Trophy candidate in Nathan MacKinnon, and is also a team that has players like Antti Rantanen, amongst other star players like Cal Makar. He's on a stacked team. If there's anybody says, oh, well, he's finally broken through, now he can come back to Montreal. Nope, not even close. He didn't fit in Montreal. Max Domi, for whatever reason, chemistry-wise, timing, whatever it was, didn't work. Montreal doesn't need him for a second time. Let's move over to some discussion with coaching in Montreal. Why does it remain such an amazement that Martin St. Louis has retained such an amazing, upbeat perspective and attitude about the Canadian season? He's an excellent coach. He's the perfect coach, as a matter of fact, for the Montreal Canadiens. He's a modern games coach. He truly understands how to work with younger players. He understands how to mix talent so one prospect or one player can feed off the skills of another and in unison work really, really well together. That seems to be a lost trait for a lot of teams, and certainly a lot of the past coaches in Montreal. He knows how to put players in a position to win. He understands how to build team chemistry, and also knows how to help the transition to the NHL level in a way that apparently few coaches do, as it seems to be much less of a struggle, as he knows exactly when to give more responsibility, when to stand pat, when to change it up a little bit, when to keep keep him with certain players. How many minutes to give him in a game? Is he playing too much? We need to pull back. He understands the players and the game. That is why he excels, and there's not a better coach that there could be for the Montreal Canadiens right now and into the future. Before anybody says, oh, well, you know, will he be the coach that will be able to lead them to a Stanley Cup? Absolutely. Martin St. Louis will be the next coach in Montreal that will have one of the longest tenures, unless he doesn't want to, but will have one of the longest tenures as head coach of that team. And speaking of prospects and letting players develop at the right pace, I'm glad the Montreal Canadiens are leaving right-handed defensive prospect Logan Mailloux in Laval for the entire season. Because there's been, well, how come Justin Braun came up and Logan Mailloux didn't? You know what? Justin Braun has already had NHL experience. It's not a wow first time thing like it would be with Logan Mailloux. Logan Mailloux is an extremely, if not the most important piece of the Laval Rockets right now, making a playoff push because he has been a cornerstone, if not the cornerstone, of that AHL franchise all year long. And a full, uninterrupted season with Laval will serve him well after he had a very unusual junior career due to injuries, due to suspensions, the amount of games that he actually got to play over the entire time and things like that. This is a perfect way to bridge the gap between the OHL and the NHL for Logan Mailloux. An equal head scratcher is the apparent immediate surprise that, oh my God, can you believe how quickly right-handed defensive prospect David Reinbacher has fit into the North American game with Laval? Yeah, he was a fifth overall pick, a tremendously skilled, gifted player that, again, Ken Hughes and Jeff Gordon made the selection with, just like they made the selection with Juraj Slavkovsky before, that people go, oh, well, you should have picked Shane Wright, or when they picked David Reinbacher, you should have picked Ryan Leonard. Yeah, there's a lot of armchair quarterbacks out there. There's a lot of woulda, coulda, shoulda. But you know what? So far, Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes have a remarkable touch of gold in everything that they do. They excel at everything. They know and recognize talent when they see it. They don't care what anybody else thinks or that their judgments that they're going to make about them. They know what they're looking for, and they know what the team needs, and they know how to build championships. And again, that's got to be driving these self-anointed experts out of their ever-loving minds, because these people are just constantly inaccurate. And Gordon and Hughes just keep turning out amazing selections and players. Moving on to some NHL roster players for a moment, I applauded Michael Pezzetta's take on with Ryan Reeves in the Toronto game, and Ryan Reeves proved that he is basically a one-dimensional player, and make no mistake about it, next season, that bell will be answered for his actions, no question about it. Moving on to Caden Primo, who had an outstanding game against the New York Rangers, and was the reason that the Montreal Canadiens were in that contest for the first 40 minutes. Yet another concern that can be put to rest is Cole Caulfield, and he is doing just fine. I hope for his benefit he at least eclipsed the 26-goal mark this season, and the reason for that is, again, I want to see all the self-anointed experts, all the condemners, all the, oh, make him part of a trade package because we got to have, for example, Macklin Celebrini, who in earlier discussions in the previous weeks, somebody had the genius idea of packaging Caulfield and Montreal's first-round pick in the 2024 draft to get Celebrini. We've already had that discussion, how A, there's no room for Celebrini. B, what are you going to displace your captain? That ought to create great team chemistry. And C, why would you give up your best pure sniper scorer? People don't seem to understand. This game takes time to excel in. Some people take more. Some people take less. Some people have more talent to play with. Some people have less right from the beginning. That seems to be really, really lost on a lot of people. Now, on to another very interesting statement and report that's making its way around out there. Austin Matthews has tied Alexander Ovechkin for the most goals in a cap era season. Is that even news? Who cares? I mean, it's great that Auston Matthews is having a phenomenal season. Auston Matthews is a fantastic player. This is not a shot at Auston Matthews, but really, statistically, somebody cares about the fact that he has tied Alexander Ovechkin in the cap era of most goals scored in a season. Okay, that just isn't exciting or newsworthy to me, but maybe it is to other people. That's on a par with somebody coming out acting overly excited about, hey, do you know the hockey season starts every year in October? Yeah, I do. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like something really mundane trying to be beefed up or trying to be made to sound super excited, and you're kind of like, that's kind of a irrelevant issue, isn't it? Really? Now, when he surpasses, if he surpasses Alexander Ovechkin's goal totals for a career, which means he will probably surpass Wayne Gretzky's totals as well, because Alexander Ovechkin has a tremendous opportunity to break that all-time goal-scoring record, or if he surpasses Wayne Gretzky's single-season goal-scoring numbers of 92 goals in a season. Okay, now we got something to discuss. Now we got something to go, yeah, that is amazing, to say the least. On an unfortunate note, Arbor Jacki once again will be out for the remainder of the 2023-2024 season, as this time his opposite shoulder from last year's injury has been injured, and he will now be having surgery on the left shoulder like he did on the right shoulder last year, and is expected to be in the lineup the opening night of the 2024-2025 season. And jumping back to free agents, and this is what I'm talking about, here's another list of players that are now circulating that Montreal has to have. Jonathan Marchessault from the Las Vegas Golden Knights, center Dakota Joshua from the Vancouver Canucks, defenseman Matt Roy of the LA Kings, and left winger Jake Guentzel of the Carolina Hurricanes. Again, why? What is with the obsession of trading for or acquiring or signing players from around the league, whether they be for assets, whether they be free agents? Why do people think Montreal needs all these players? Again, they have everything from within their organization to take care and fulfill their needs. They do not need all these players from other organizations. I just don't get this obsession. And lost in all of this is the fact that especially free agents, and one could make the argument for top-end talent, so to speak, in a trade acquisition, always carry along with them big contracts. We've had the discussions on previous episodes of very rarely an acquired by a trade or free agent player comes to Montreal and hits it big. One of the most recent would have to be Mike Matheson. His team leadership, locker room, team chemistry, influence on younger players, his outstanding play since he's arrived in Montreal. He's an exception. And if they all did that, you'd like, okay, I can understand why you'd want to acquire players. Most of them haven't. Most of them have not been Matheson, Damfus, or Muller. They've been Max Domi. They've been Jonathan Drouin. They haven't turned out to be good acquisitions, which again saddles Montreal with more deadweight contracts, which the organization is finally moving through and filtering through and slowly but surely either unloading, or they're expiring, as in the case of Jonathan Drouin's contract last year, Tanner Pearson's contract this year. Why would anybody want to see Montreal saddle themselves with that kind of financial baggage for a minimum return most of the time? How is that a good thing for any organization, let alone the Canadiens who are in a rebuild? Who, by the way, soon to be Caden Gooley, Arbor Jacki, Juraj Slafkovský, Kirby Dach, will all need contracts, and you better have the money to retain the Slafkovskys, the Dachs, the Gooleys, and others, because if you don't, you're losing cornerstone, long-term, young pieces of your organization. And for what? Because you wanted to sign some aging, or, well, we need a good veteran mix to go along with the amount of young players. No, you don't. No, you don't. You need that money to be able to sign young prospects like Florian Jacki, who they just not only signed to a 3-year contract, but has finished up his OHL career and will be at least in Laval next year, and maybe yet another player that surprises in his initial season, and especially based on family history and how well Arbor Jacki positioned himself in the rookie walk-on season with Montreal. And and became a regular. This kid's got even more talent, supposedly, than Arbor does. So you gotta have the money for those players. If you want to have a concern rolling around in the back of your head, and you want to sit there and say, well, here's where Montreal's concern should really be, I hope that concern for the Canadiens in the offseason is a conditioning or protective type program for players like Caden Gooley and Arbor Jacki. Gooley's been hurt a lot early in his career. Arbor Jacki now has had a right and left shoulder injury that's required surgical repair. Now, the good news is they're really young, and you recover younger, and you can even be stronger because of the condition of your body, the oxygen in your blood, even beyond things like hyperbaric chambers and things. You can heal faster, and you can be 100%, and you can even be stronger. Versus as you get older and torn more down, it will take longer, and you may not recover as completely or as quick. But I hope that there's a program like that that's going to be put in place for players to learn to protect themselves and to avoid injuries when possible, or not leave themselves in precarious or open positions to be injured in the first place. And a perfect example of that is Juraj Slafkovský. He's learned how to use his frame, his body, protect himself, protect the puck, and keep himself healthy this year versus last year when he went out with an injury after only 39 games last year. Speaking of Juraj Slafkovský, it was great to see him score his first hat trick in the Philadelphia game. Not surprising that he is putting it together. Again, he has a coach that understands him, how to bring him along, and where to put him position-wise and with minutes-wise to win and to succeed. The only bad part about the Philadelphia Flyers game in which Slafkovský scored his hat trick was, I wish Montreal would have gotten a shutout. And I wish that for Sam Montembeau more than any other player, because as great as it was to see Slafkovský get his hat trick, to see Christian Dvorak's return and get two goals, Brendan Gallagher netted two goals, Joel Armia's continual rise from the ashes, landing multiple points in the game, Josh Anderson finally caught a break and scored a goal, Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield continued their point scoring streaks, and Raphael Harvey-Pinard even got into the action. As great as all of that is, I would have loved to have seen a shutout for Sam Montembeau. It was great to see some defensive players. Again, Mike Matheson comes to mind, David Savard, Jonathan Kovacevic, and Jordan Harris with three assists in that game. That was all great for the defensive side of the game, but I wish the defense could have gotten Montembeau that shutout. He just deserved it. Not that I'm going to complain about a 9-3 game. I think that's a great offensive outburst for the Canadiens. Continues to show a lot of development. Players hitting their strides. Lots of players contributing. But I wish Montembeau would have gotten that shutout, because he had one hell of a game for the Canadiens. And just to wrap up episode 99 with what I would think would be the perfect topic, can the people who want to tell Montreal management how to do their jobs please stop with the you have to acquire veterans, you have to have a age balanced team, or whatever that's all about? You cannot win with all rookies or young players in the lineup. Why can't they? Slafkovský, Suzuki, Gooley, Jacki, Harris, Primo, Montembeau, Jaden Struble, Kirby Dach, Alex Newhook. They're all young players. Why can't they win with those players? And every one of those players that I mentioned have proven these naysayers wrong every time, but have not only achieved success, but have excelled and become players that play in their rookie seasons or early on like they've played for a decade already in the league. Why is it not possible for a lot of people to think outside the box and realize that everything doesn't have to be done the same way, or there's only one way to do things? Montreal's doing it their own way. Whether anybody thinks it can be done that way or not, that usually gets into a much deeper issue. That's usually one's own admissions of, well, since I can't do it, if it's not possible for me to do, nobody can. If only every human being was that great as their ego told them that they were. That's not the case. Because someone can't do something or hasn't seen it done that way or hasn't heard it done that way does not mean in any way that it can't be done that way. Montreal is doing it their way, whether that's not considered the traditional way or the way that it's been done in the past, doesn't matter. They're succeeding. They're having success. They're doing it on their own terms. They're thinking outside the box. And if you think about this whole rebuild, that is really the theme of the Montreal Canadiens in the hiring of Kent Hughes by Jeff Gordon. That was an out-of-the-box hire as a GM who had never been a GM before. Oh my God, who would take that kind of risk? There's only one of 32 clubs in the league. Are you really going to take that kind of risk? Yes, because Kent Hughes is that good. Not only is Kent Hughes that good? Jeff Gordon is also that good as an executive VP, number one. Number two, Kent Hughes is not just that good, but is probably already one of, if not the best GMs in the league within a two-year span that he's only been a GM for. They thought again outside of the box by bringing in Martin St. Louis, who had never coached at the NHL, AHL, ECHL, Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, Ontario Hockey League, Western Hockey League. He coached his kids. That was his experience to become head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. How's that worked out for those three guys? I'd say they're the best staff in the league right now, by far. Stop the unneeded questioning of their actions and how they go about doing their job just because it's something different or, oh my God, that can't work. Remember two Stanley Cups of the past? One will certainly be embedded in Canadian fans' minds, and the other one was a loss for the Montreal Canadiens. The Canadiens were involved in both these Stanley Cups I'm going to mention. 1989, the Calgary Flames' Cinderella run to the Stanley Cup. Everything fell their way. They beat the Canadiens in the final. 1993, the Montreal Canadiens won that year with a record amount of rookies and overtime games that year. Things can happen out of the box. Things can happen in new ways, new directions. There is not anyone who believes that there's a one-size-fits-all answer for everything with no exceptions is destined for failure. Repeatedly. Why aren't the questions being asked about bringing up Logan Mailloux, David Reinbach, Lane Hutson, Owen Beck, Philip Massar, Sean Farrell, and even Florian Jacki? Why is it that those players aren't being discussed and people saying, can't wait to see them next year on the roster or at least competing for it? Versus all of the, we have to have this player by trade, we have to have this player by free agency. Why aren't the prospects being talked about? Where is the lack of excitement for this tremendous level of talent that Montreal has within its organization? Believing that something can only be done one way or the traditional way, or that thinking outside the box never works, that is exactly what holds back the human race, entire countries in the world, from realizing what could be and greatness can consistently. On that note, thanks for tuning in to episode 99 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have an amazing weekend.